Not Your Poppies podcast is a place where booze and humor are used to bring you the real raw stories of women throughout history.
It's feminism with a hint of tequila.
No es cafecito con tu abuela.
It's tequila shots with your best friend.
My name is Carmen.
And I'm Laura. And welcome to another episode.
Just started right away.
Well, you were talking about your life crisis, so I didn't want to interrupt.
You're never interrupting. I always have a life crisis.
We always have a life. You know what? Sometimes I feel like I'm that one person that just always has something going on. Like something always bad happens to me. And it makes me feel like people probably think like I'm exaggerating or like it can't be possible that everything that could possibly go wrong usually happens to me. I am that girl that will text, I have a family emergency or my kid broke his leg or, you know, I hate being that person. I really do. It's a tough life out here.
That was me.
I know. And this is, and they're not, I'm not lying ever. And it's just like.
I'm laughing. It's funny because it's true.
It's so sad. I hate being that girl.
By the way, what did you text me during these 3 days?
I told you about our listenership that I like skyrocketed. I don't know if you checked it out.
I haven't. I've been without a phone. I was barely like, you're like, oh, give me 30 minutes. That I started like logging into all my other apps and stuff. Know what I did notice though? I noticed I was more present now that I had no phone, but I also noticed that should I die, it would take weeks for somebody to find out.
For real though. I could have reached out, but I'm like, she just needs her space. I know I need my space a lot. So I'll just give you your space.
Dude, not my mom, not Fernando, not you, not my brothers. I think Jason, the only reason he found out was because I texted him from Mariana's phone and I was like, hey, I'm going to send you a code. Please send it back to me. My phone's not working.
That's embarrassing. I'm sorry. You're like that lady, which we should totally cover, but synopsis of the story. Maybe I've told the story before. She like died in her apartment and like no one knew that she had died after like a year later. Like no, 3 years later, something like ridiculous.
Oh, isn't
like
that the one in England?
Like, yes.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, and because she had paid all of her bills ahead of time.
Yeah, she had like paid ahead. So like no one ever like batted an eye. And it was during the holidays. So when they finally like found her body, she was like still wrapping presents. Like it was so sad.
Carmen, that would be me. That would be me. Like nobody found out that. I think the only one that was worried about me was Edith. And that's because she asked me to go pick up a package because they're in Guaymas. So they're on vacation right now. Yay for Fernando. But she asked me to go pick up a package from her and I didn't respond. So she sent me a Facebook message. She's like, hey, I sent you a message. Like, what's going on? And then finally I replied to her and I was like, oh my God, I've been without a phone for 3 days. She's like, oh my God, what happened? I was like, you know what? Edith is the only one who would care if I died.
I just wanted to respect your space. Okay. You want a year off?
HBO cool. Documentary, when people find my body 5 years later, Carmen's going to be like, I knew she wanted her space.
I just wanted to respect her space. I don't want to be, and I'm also not clingy. So I'm like, you want a year off of me? I get it. Like, go for it, babe.
Why haven't you guys updated your podcast? Well, Laura's been wanting her space for the last 3 years. I don't know.
I don't know what to tell you. By the way, everyone, welcome to our podcast. And you guys are listening to
with one live host and one long dead
host who died a long time
that ago. came back from the dead just to record.
Yeah, she came back. She's the ghost of Laura. But welcome everyone, and thank you for listening and tuning in to our very last episode. Finally, the end is here. Woo-hoo. I don't know. I mean, we're excited. You guys are probably excited.
The end of the season.
The end of a lifetime. The end of forever. Oh, shit. I'm drinking gin and tonics. I should probably slow down. That tasted way too good.
It is the middle of the day, but it's 5 o'clock somewhere.
It's like 5 o'clock in an hour. Cheers.
Yeah, there you go. So you should start drinking. I mean, do you have any plans for after this?
Brandon wants to go do something. I'm hoping I get a little tipsy so I can have an
excuse. You can't
excuse.
Do it drunk? Like, you can't do it drunk?
Should we test it?
I would.
Yeah.
I mean, no. As long as you're not the one driving, you'll be fine.
Right? No. Yeah. We'll see. We'll see what happens by the end of this episode. And it's gin and tonic. And I've noticed with gin and tonics, I usually have a 3-drink limit, but gin and tonics, they've been a little weird to me lately. So by 2, I'm done.
Interesting.
I'm like already ready to party. Like,
your limit used to be 7.
Now it's 2. If I have the 3rd, I'm going to party. I'm going to have an all-nighter. We're putting on music. We're putting on mariachi. It's going to be a party. It's a non-negotiable party.
Fucking fabulous. I would go with the party. Just party it up. I mean, it's the last episode of the season. Our listeners deserve it.
Cheers. And you're with Truly. What flavor do we have today?
I am. Today, I still have the margarita style. I literally got the 12-pack just for our recordings. This is strawberry hibiscus. That's the one I'm drinking right now.
Yeah.
Not sponsored, Truly. Sponsor me. And then I have the
you double fisted
cucumber
today. You're double afterwards. Fisting.
Yeah. Dude, my weekend, it's been a shit show. And I was like, I don't want to drink alone because then that's just gonna make me feel like even more of a loser. So I was waiting for you and I was like, ooh, I'm gonna record now. My time to drink.
I'm gonna have some social drinking.
Social drinking.
When your doctor asks, how often do you drink? You're going to be like, I only do it when I record on my podcast instead of socially.
I'm a social drinker. Yeah. Like when my friends, you know, on my computer screen.
So in counseling, Brenna and I go to counseling as like maintenance. We don't go to fix anything. It's mostly like maintenance. I convinced him. What type of person would you say? I'm like a hippie. I don't know.
No, I think you're a very aware person. And yeah. I admire that because a lot of people think that counseling is only for when you're having problems or when you're trying to fix an issue, right? Like, it's like the last thing they're going to do to try to fix their marriage, fix their relationship.
Yeah.
In reality, counseling should be more of a like a maintenance, like just like you take your car to get an oil change to, you fill it up with gas, you change the tires, you get a rotation. Relationships, especially your self relationship and the relationship with those closest to you, also require maintenance. And that's exactly what therapy is.
Literally. Yes. And then sometimes we even bring Ian and we do like some artsy stuff and it's really fun. Anyway, back to the point, podcast. So we're talking and whatever, and he like drops kind of like, have you listened to Carmen's podcast? Therapist is like, what? I didn't know you did a podcasting. And I was like, it's something super low key. It's my hobby. And she's like, please send it to me. I'm like, lady, it's really inappropriate. Like, I don't want you to
She's
going to
diagnose you. You realize that, right?
Oh God. If you're listening, I'm already ahead of time. I'm sorry.
She's like, she's a psychopathic narcissist.
I wonder sometimes. This last session was really funny because I was just mad. I've just been mad, Laura. Like, I'm not an angry person. I like to say that I'm a very patient person, that I give 2 fucks about most of the things going on around in my life. But lately I've been on edge and I just wanted to fight. So on our way to counseling, I'm pissed at Brandon for something dumb. I think he told me, he's like, I really don't want to go today. And that just pissed me off. Which usually I don't care, but I'm mad, right? I'm like ignoring him the entire way. He's like trying, he feels like the environment's kind of off. And
you're so passive aggressive.
So passive aggressive, which I never do, but I'm just like annoyed. Like, I'm just so mad. So we finally get to counseling and she's just like, oh, she feels it, right? It's like super edgy. And she's like, how has it been? And I'm like, it's fine. Well, that wasn't convincing. And I'm like, no, it's fine. And but no, because this and this and then he this and then this and then that. And she's like, all right, let's break it down. So what are you mad about? Well, him, and he told me he didn't want to come. why didn't you want to come? Because I'm tired. I've been tired. I've had a long week. I worked like almost 80 hours this week. She's like, that's valid. And I'm like, no, but if he committed and he said he was going to, like, I'm just being a shit show, right? Like, that's even just like, I don't even know myself, right? But then like, after you like kind of talk, you start rambling. Mm-hmm. Like you hear yourself and you're like, well, you sound so stupid. Why are you mad? Like, why are you, you're just picking a fight. You're just, there's nothing to be angry or upset, but it was a really cool moment to kind of have and just kind of like dismantle and break it down and just be like, I had a rough week. Nothing with my family, right? Like it was just mm-hmm. a rough week. And yeah, like, let's talk about that. And why am I letting it kind of like bleed through my personal life and how mm-hmm. to dissociate like one thing and another. So it was really cool. And by the end, Brandon looks at me. He's like, you still mad? I'm like, no. He's like, you're hungry? I'm so hungry. He's like, what do you want to eat? And she starts laughing. She's like, you guys are the funniest. And I'm just like, I'm sorry, weren't productive. She's like, no, you don't understand. This was like really cool. She's like, because you came in like super hot headed and like now yeah. you're just like, why am I mad? So it was like a really cool thing to also like see myself and kind of put myself in like in another perspective and just be like
do a self-reflection immediately.
Immediately. Yeah. yeah. And sometimes yeah. we don't get that. And that's why mm-hmm. I think I'm so thankful for counseling, because you don't get that. You get mad and then you look for reasons to stay mad. And then you start nitpicking yes. at why you're mad mm-hmm. and validate that one thing. And that's why yes. I always tell people, like, you never got divorced because the dishes were dirty. You didn't get divorced because he forgot to take the trash out.
Yeah.
You got divorced because there was a lot of little things happening and you let them mm-hmm. build upon and upon and upon and upon.
And so. You just never took the time to communicate. And it's right. Like, it's completely valid that Brandon was exhausted after 80 hours. Like, I mean, 40 hours kills me a week. I'm just like, I'm dead. I'm like, who the hell decided to do a 40-hour week? This is insane. This should be illegal. It should be a sin.
Yeah.
80 hours, I could not imagine. So yeah. I totally agree. But you're right. Sometimes we get pissed off and we just continuously look for things to nitpick and continue to be pissed off about to validate our own feelings. Mm-hmm. And it could be something, like you said, it could be like we had an ugly interaction while we were driving, we had an ugly interaction at the store, or we had an ugly interaction at work. And now it's bleeding into our personal life. It's bleeding into our home life. I was like that yesterday. I was so exhausted with dealing with my phone issues. I saw Ariana grab the, you know how I keep like the water filter jug? Well, I keep it on the fridge because mm-hmm. it's the summer. And I saw her just grab the jug and like pour it into her mouth. And I'm one of those persons that I don't even like using the same cup twice, because I don't know if somebody else used it and I don't want their germs, because God forbid I get somebody else's germs. And when I saw her do that, mind you, her lips weren't even touching it, but I was so upset about it. I was like, oh my God, that is disgusting. What am I raising? A Neanderthal? I've taught you better than this. But like, I was just having the works, right?
Yeah.
And then like, I look at Ariana and I see her face, and her face is embarrassed. She's ashamed.
She's like,
right? And then when I see that, I'm like, oh my God, what type of emotions am I bringing upon my daughter for something that, if it really bothered me, I could just wash it and be done with it. And it was at that moment I knew I needed a nap. And I went and I took a 2-hour nap. And when I woke up, Ariana had washed all the dishes. And I was like, she is such a wonderful daughter. And sometimes I really let my emotions get the best of me.
Yeah.
And I love that you had somebody to walk you through that self-reflection, because sometimes we need that.
Yeah. And also, like, if you don't have access to counseling, take a nap, right? Yes. Sleep on it. I love that.
You guys, go for a walk, take a nap. Like, honestly, I always tell people that one of the main reasons, like, I don't have wrinkles or anything is because anytime anything is bothering me or stressing me out, I literally go take a nap. I'm just like, no, thank you. I'm just going to go take a nap.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's just the key. It's that self-awareness. And holy fuck, we got deep today.
And for our, hold on, how many seasons is this?
Four seasons.
10 episodes per season, but 11 this one. So that means 10, 20, 30, 41. This is our 41st episode.
41st.
Yeah. Isn't the 41st year when people are like, ooh, cuidado, ya cumplió 41. Because apparently when people turn 41 is when they figure out that they're like gay or lesbian or LGBTQ.
I feel like in your 40s, like, I think you like, well, my experience has been like a lot of people go through, maybe the self-discovery of something new. Lots of divorces, I've noticed. Lots of affairs.
Well, because the kids are already raised, right?
Yeah, a lot of
midlife crisis.
Midlife crisis, lots of cheating, lots of, you know.
Does this mean like we're eventually going to cheat on each other in the next season or so?
Oh, I cheat. I am a cheater. I'm everything. I told you. What did I tell you the first time I met you? Or when you told me you were leaving to Tampa? What did I tell you?
You told me you would cheat on me and you did.
I told you. I did. Don't count on me staying as a friend. You're leaving my vicinity of my world.
And then remember the fucking prank you and your little buddies pulled on me. I was maybe not even 2 months in Tampa and I get a text message from Carmen. We can't be friends anymore. And I'm like, what?
I did this? What? I did this?
Yes. No, yes. You and Aldo and your little friends that I'm not going to name. And I'm like, why? What's
Chuck
wrong?
And Ricky Lee or what?
No, it was Lago and I think Sammy.
Oh,
and basically these motherfuckers. So they grab Carmen's phone and they text me, we can't be friends anymore. Mind you, I'm in Tampa, so I'm thousands of miles away. And I'm like, why? What happened? And then they're like, oh, I can't believe you would do this to me. What type of friend are you? And I'm like, what? And like the whole time I'm like going through my head and I'm like, what did I do? Like, oh my God, what did I do? Like, I sound like a horrible person right now. What did I do?
Maybe and you're I like, do I just, remember this. Maybe
I can't I believe you don't even remember what you did. And I'm just like, yeah, I don't. So then I call her and the motherfuckers ignore me. And then I call her like 3 times. And at this point, I'm just like, okay, whatever. She's mad. I'm like, eventually she might tell me. And if she doesn't, that's on her. Like, we're adults. And then these motherfuckers call me and they're laughing their asses off, drunk as hell. It was like Friday night. And they're like, what, Laura? What? Are you scared? Are you scared? And I was like, you guys are assholes. And I was so upset.
You remember that actually?
You guys are assholes. You guys, they did that to me. I need a therapist. I hope your therapist hears this and has a stern talking with you about it.
Oh my God. Yes. I remember that. Assholes. That wasn't me, by the way. That was all of them. I probably just maybe unlocked.
You
my
were laughing. I could hear you laughing in the background, you asshole.
I'm not a good person, but I love you. And here we are so many years later.
I know.
So many years later. So
it's been a ride nonetheless.
Any maintenance?
No, but you have some.
We have a TikTok account, you guys. I don't know how to TikTok. I don't know how to use it, how to work it, how to do anything, but we are there. So if you guys want to show your love and support, please follow us. Yes. Not Your Poppy's podcast. Show us some love and please like be kind, because the editing thing is still not my thing. Not video. It's weird. It's a different world.
Yeah. You should get like little clippets of our maybe like our reactions, right? Like when you're reading your story or I'm reading my story. Like
I want to do that. I want to like record us when we're together. I feel like we can make it super cute.
Like when we did the tequila tasting.
Yeah. Yeah, like that's super cute.
We should.
Yeah.
We should do like one of those trains to Santa Fe or something. That looked pretty fun.
We should do something.
Just get drunk on a train to nowhere.
Speaking my love language. Cool. So that's all I have. Should we get started?
We should actually, because whoo, I know you love true crime. So I was like, I want to bring a story that will educate us and will also feed into Carmen's true crime passion.
I love it already.
Thank you. And so let's just get right into it. So
disclaimer,
today,
if I get too drunk by my story, I might not tell my story. So,
oh my God, stop it.
All right, go.
You have to stop after the one gin and tonic until yours. Okay. So this is literally the story of a mother's worst nightmare. Okay. So starting strong.
Super strong.
Jessica Linehan already had a son when she married Simon Gonzalez in 1990. During their marriage, Jessica gave birth to their three daughters, Rebecca, Catherine, and Leslie. In 1996, Simon began to exhibit abusive behavior towards Jessica and the girls. In January 1999, after Simon attempted to commit suicide, Jessica filed for divorce and Simon moved out of the home. Between January and May, Simon displayed erratic and unpredictable behavior that harmed Jessica and the girls. During this time, he had several run-ins with the Castle Rock Police Department for road rage while driving with his daughters, two break-ins to Jessica's house, and for trespassing on private property and obstructing public officials at the Castle Rock Police Station. Jessica obtained a temporary restraining order on May 21, 1999, in which the judge noted physical or emotional harm would result if Gonzalez were not kept out of the family's home. The restraining order directed law enforcement to use every reasonable means to enforce the order. Even after the restraining order was obtained, Simon continued to terrorize Jessica and the girls and violate the order. Jessica would contact the Castle Rock Police Department, but they would mostly ignore her calls and, in her own words, would be dismissive of her and even scolded her for calling them and asking for help. On June 4th, 1999, the Colorado State Court made the restraining order permanent and granted Jessica sole physical custody of the three girls and allowed Simon occasional visitation, which the judge restricted to one midweek dinner visit that Jessica and Simon would arrange. Okay, so everything going forward is happened on Tuesday, June 22nd, 1999.
Okay.
The girls were outside playing with a friend in front of the house while Jessica was inside the home busy with housework. Jessica went outside to check on the girls, and when she realized they weren't there, her heart immediately sank. At 5:50 p.m., Jessica contacted the Castle Rock police. During this conversation, she communicated to the dispatcher that she did not know where her children were and that she thought perhaps her daughters had been taken by her ex-husband, and that this visit had not been prearranged as required by the restraining order. She also informed them that their friend, Rebecca Robinson, had also been taken. At 7:40 p.m., Jessica called the police department on a second time, noting that she held a restraining order against Simon and that she was concerned over her children's safety. At approximately 7:50 p.m., 2 hours after Jessica first called the Castle Rock Police Department, Officer Brink and Sergeant Rusey arrived at her house. Jessica showed both officers a copy of the restraining order, which expressly directed them to arrest Simon upon violation of the order. She explained to the officers that the judge had specifically noted in the order that the dinner visit was to be pre-arranged by the parties, that Simon's normal visitation was on Wednesday nights, and that she had communicated to her ex-husband that he could not switch nights that week, since the girls had plans for their friend to sleep over. Officer Brink held the restraining order in his hands and glanced at it briefly, and then communicated to Jessica that there was nothing he could do because the children were with their father. The officers promised Jessica that they would drive by Simon's apartment to see if he and the girls were there. Shortly after 8:30, Jessica was able to reach Simon by phone and learned that he was with the girls at an amusement park in Denver, approximately 40 minutes away from Castle Rock. She also received an alarming call from Simon's girlfriend, Rosemary Young. Rosemary was asking her questions about his mental health history, his capacity for harming himself or the children, and his access to firearms. Rosemary also let Jessica know that Simon had threatened to run off a cliff earlier that day.
So essentially it was on his day that it was
no,
his.
It wasn't. So this happened on Tuesday night.
Tuesday night.
Yes.
That the girls go missing. And that's why she freaked out.
That is correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But we get to Wednesday and they're like, it's his day.
This is all Tuesday.
This is still Tuesday. But why does the judge, why do they say that they couldn't do anything about it?
Because they were with their father.
But there was a restraining order.
Correct.
So
they said they couldn't do anything because they're with their dad.
Okay, so that's where they dropped the ball.
Yes, because again, all of this is happening on Tuesday, June 22nd. Mm. And Jessica and Simon had prearranged that their weekly dinner visits would be on Wednesday nights, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's why Jessica's like, something's wrong, something's wrong. And then she gets this call from Rosemary asking her, hey, you know, does he have issues with mental health? Do you think he's capable of harming himself or the children? Does he have access to guns? And then Rosemary lets
the girlfriend.
Yes, the girlfriend of Simon let Jessica know that just earlier that same day, he had threatened to drive off the cliff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, after this call, Jessica becomes alarmed, like even more, right? She's like, holy shit, what the fuck's going on? So she calls Castle Rock Police Department for a third time to communicate her concerns. The dispatcher at that time tells Jessica that an officer would be sent to her house, but the officer never arrives. Officer Brink did call Jessica shortly after that, and she explained to him again that she had a restraining order and that it was highly unusual, really weird, and wrong for Simon to have taken the girls to Denver on a weeknight, and that she was very worried, particularly because it was almost bedtime and the girls were still not home. Jessica calls the Castle Rock Police Department a fourth and a fifth time before 10 p.m., so this is still June 22nd, and requests several actions from Officer Brink. So this is what Jessica tells them. She wants an officer to be dispatched to locate Simon and the children in Denver and to call the police to the Denver police. She wants a statewide all points bulletin for Simon and the missing girls and to contact Rosemary Young, Simon's girlfriend. Officer Brink allegedly, refused to perform any of these three actions and asked Jessica to wait until 10 p.m. to see whether Simon returned with the children. Now, I'm saying allegedly because I don't want us to like end up being sued down the line, but all of this happened, you know, all of this happened from Jessica. This is what we know.
Her perspective, yeah.
Yes. This is what Jessica said. I was shocked when they responded that there was nothing they could do because Denver was out of their jurisdiction. I called back and begged them to put out a missing children report or to contact the Denver police, but they refused. The officer told me I needed to take this matter to divorce court and told me to call back if the children were not home in a few hours. The officer said to me, at least you know where the children are. They are with their father. I felt totally confused and humiliated. I called the police again and again that night.
Assholes.
Yes.
Fucking assholes.
Jessica called the police department a sixth time around 10 p.m. to report that her children were still not home and again informed them about the restraining order. Because remember, originally they're like, no, wait a couple hours, wait until 10 p.m. Calls them back. She's like, hey, they're still not home. During this call, the dispatcher asked Jessica to call them back on a non-emergency line and scolded her and stated that it was a little ridiculous making them freak out and thinking the kids are gone. So at this point, they're like even telling her like, what's your problem, lady? Like, you're acting ridiculous. And so Jessica called again a seventh time at midnight to inform them that she was at her husband's apartment or her ex-husband's apartment and that no one was home, and she feared that her ex-husband had run off with the girls. The dispatcher told her that she would send an officer, but the officer never arrived. This is the second time that they've told her they're going to send an officer and nobody shows up. Shortly thereafter, Jessica drove to the police department to file an incident report where she met with Detective Allfinger, to whom she communicated again that she had a restraining order against Simon Gonzalez, that she was afraid he had lost it, and that he might be suicidal. The police simply replied that the father of the children had the right to spend time with them, even though she repeatedly mentioned the restraining order against him and that no visitation time had been agreed upon. She was only advised to continue to wait until 12 p.m. And when she called at that time, her pleas were dismissed. So this is already after 10. So this is between 10 and 12. And she goes to the police department. She's filing an incident report and she's telling them, and the officer straight up tells her, like, you know what? Wait until midnight. So Jessica goes home, right? She's getting nowhere with the police department. She's done all she can on her end. Approximately 10 hours after Jessica's first call to the police, Simon Gonzalez, Simon Gonzalez drives up and parks outside of the police station at 3:15 a.m. on Wednesday, June 23rd, 1999. Oh, no. He waits approximately 10 to 15 minutes, and then he begins shooting at the station.
Oh, my God.
The police return fire and shot and kill Simon. And then they discover the bodies of Leslie, who's 7 years old, Catherine, who's 9 years old, and Rebecca, who's 10 years old, in the back of Simon's truck, apparently having been shot to death.
Fucking asshole.
All three girls deceased. Not only do they have this shoot-off altercation with Simon, they find the bodies of all three girls that Jessica's been pleading with them to check on and to find and to bring home. But they don't even have the guts to call Jessica. Jessica ends up hearing about the shooting from Rosemary, Simon's girlfriend. So Rosemary contacts Jessica to tell her about the shooting, and Jessica immediately drives to the police station. Officers refused to offer her any information on whether the girls were alive or not, and they ignored her pleas to see the girls and identify them for about 12 hours.
Oh, God. This is so fucked up.
Despite repeated pleas from the family, the deaths of Leslie, Catherine, and Rebecca Gonzalez were never duly investigated by the state. Jessica never learned any details of how, when, or where her daughters died, and their death certificates do not state the information. To this day, Jessica does not know whether the numerous bullets found inside of their bodies came from Simon's guns or the guns of the police officers who fired to Simon, right? Because remember, they were like in a shootout. So they don't know if Simon killed the girls or if the police officers killed the girls, and nobody has ever heard.
I didn't even think of that. I thought like they just like arrived, you know, dead, but that's so true. Like, what if it happened during the shootout?
Correct. Holy fuck. Because they had numerous bullets. So it goes to show you either the father shot at them several times to make sure they're dead, or the father basically committed like, not like murder suicide, but I don't want to kill myself, so I'm going to force you guys to kill all
of
us.
What is that called? There's a name for that, huh? That's what the shooters do these days.
Yeah. And I'm not sure what it's called, but it could be either or, right? So Jessica alleges that she has never received any information as to why Simon was approved to purchase a gun that night by the Federal Bureau of Investigation, so by the FBI, since gun dealers cannot sell guns to individuals who are subject to a restraining order in the United States. So that very same night that the girls were abducted, he bought a gun.
The night of.
That very night. Investigations conducted by the authorities solely related to the shooting death of Simon Gonzalez. So all they investigated was how Simon died. According to them, these investigations summarily conclude that Simon had murdered his children before the shootout at the Castle Rock Police Department station, but they have yet to provide little evidence to substantiate this conclusion. They claim that the evidence in these documents is insufficient to determine which bullets killed Jessica's daughters, either those of the Castle Rock Police Department or those of Simon Gonzalez. Jessica and her family remain deeply traumatized by the deaths of Leslie, Catherine, and Rebecca. Their sense of loss has been aggravated by the failure of Colorado and federal authorities to adequately investigate these deaths and respond with the information that the family seeks. So Jessica's mom, Tina Rivera, stated that the entire family has experienced great trauma and feels that closure to their tragedy will only come once questioning surrounding the girls' deaths are answered. Jessica filed a lawsuit in the United States District Court for the District of Colorado, alleging that the city of Castle Rock and several police officers had violated her rights under the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment, claiming both substantive and procedural due process challenges. Firstly, in the realm of substantive due process, Jessica Linehan argued that she and her daughters had a right to police protection against harm from her ex-husband. In the realm of procedural due process, she argued that she possessed a protected property interest in the enforcement of the terms of her restraining order and that the Castle Rock police officers' arbitrary denial of that entitlement without due process violated her rights. Jessica also claims that the city had failed to properly train its police officers in relation to the enforcement of restraining orders and had a policy of recklessly disregarding the right to police protection created by such orders. The district court dismissed Jessica's case.
What?
Mm-hmm. So hold on. It doesn't end there. Like, this story was so wild when I heard it. I was like, there is no way. So the district court dismisses Jessica's case and she appeals. And a panel of judges of the Third Circuit Court of Appeals affirmed in part and reserved in part. These findings were then affirmed in a rehearing before all of the judges of the appellate court. Jessica's case reached the Supreme Court, which is the highest court in the United States for those of our listeners who don't live here. On June 27th, 2005, the Supreme Court rejected all of the claims presented by Jessica Linehan, holding that her due process rights had not been violated. The Supreme Court held that despite Colorado's mandatory arrest law and the express and mandatory terms of her restraining order, Jessica Linehan had no personal entitlement to police enforcement of the order under the Due Process Clause.
No fucking way. Was her fucking lawyer shitty or what the fuck?
I don't even think it's a matter of representation.
Well, no, yeah, I mean,
because Jessica had a lot of assistance. And so,
but it's like so clear, it's so night and day, like there is so much, like,
you would supporting think, right?
Her. Yeah, I'm thinking she's going to sue and she's going to get a fucking thousands of millions of dollars that will never, ever replace her babies.
Yeah.
But she's going to win.
But at least it'll change the law, right? It'll make sure that going forward, the police is like,
handle hey, this I've shit called, better.
You need to protect somebody. You need to handle it. Mm-hmm. Finding information on the case was nearly impossible. I actually got the information from the official report. So all of this information came from report number 80/11, case 12.626, merits Jessica Linehan Gonzalez et al. United States, July 21st, 2011. Now, because of the decision.
2011, her babies died. When did her babies die?
They died in 1999.
Are you fucking for real?
Now, there was an article I found, and this article came from, the article is called Town of Castle Rock, Colorado v. Gonzalez, Implications for Health, for Public Health Policy and Practice by Joe Teitelbaum, JD, LLM, v. Nelligan Coogan, and Sarah Rosenbaum, JD. Now, this article, you can find it at the National Library of Medicine at the National Center for Biotechnology Information. So you guys, this is how deep I went into this research. I was like, no, I need information. So I pulled up their police report, which is where I got all of the information from, right from the police report itself. And regarding the decision from the Supreme Court, it's going to come from the article from the National Library of Medicine.
Okay. Dumb it down for people like me, though. So don't make it so complicated.
Okay. Yes. That's what I loved about this article, is it really dumbed it down for like the rest of us who have not studied law. The article states, this particularly heartbreaking case involved the murder of three girls by an estranged husband and father. The precipitating event was the failure on part of a local police department to enforce a court-issued restraining order. In a 7-2 opinion, the Supreme Court ruled that due process principles did not create a constitutional right to police protection, despite the existence of a court-issued restraining order. So basically, you do not have a right to be protected by the police.
You don't.
We don't.
Isn't that like against the Constitution or some bullshit like that? Because
I'm about to give you exactly why.
No, don't fuck with me right now.
Writing for the majority, Justice Scalia concluded that even if underlying state law created an individually enforceable right to police assistance in the enforcement of the restraining order, and it did not, according to the court majority, a restraining order is not the type of quote-unquote property interest that triggers due process protections under the federal constitution. Justice Scalia noted that the due process clause does not protect all government benefits, especially benefits such as restraining orders that governments have discretion to grant, deny, and enforce. The court explained that a tradition of police discretion has long existed across a range of issues, including under what circumstances, if any, police would enforce a restraining order. For example, a police officer could decide that a particular violation of the terms of the order is too minor to justify enforcement. Justice Scalia noted further that even if the Colorado legislature had enacted a statute mandating police enforcement, this would not necessarily convert police enforcement obligations into a separate and individually enforceable legal right. Since a right of individual enforcement, even in the face of a corresponding government obligation, must be expressed. So no, it doesn't even matter if there's a state law requiring police officers to follow through. Like, there's an enforcement, like you have to follow through. It is up to the police officer's discretion whether or not they want to justify enforcement. The dissent, so the two judges who voted against it, found that the restraining order did in fact amount to a personal enforceable property interest. The dissent argued that the majority was wrong to assert that the private interest in government protection does not resemble a traditional concept of property. Looking to the legislative history of a Colorado law requiring police officers to use every reasonable means, which was in the restraining order, like it was literally wrote on there by the judge, to enforce restraining orders, and to the text and purpose of the state's domestic legislation. The dissent wrote that the majority failed to recognize that the protection order law was enacted for a narrow class of individuals who are indeed entitled beneficiaries of domestic restraining orders. The Castle Rock decision addresses the issue of police powers. The term generally used to describe the inherent authority of state and local governments to require conformance with established standards of conduct. Police powers lie at the heart of the role of government in society, since they form the basis of the government's power to act in numerous venues, the public health and welfare to public safety. Underlying the tension between governmental power to act and the existence of an individual right to legally demand governmental action are complex social and cultural ambiguities regarding what Americans want from their government. This notion that the Constitution empowers but does not obligate government to act has come to be known as a negative constitution. Have you ever heard of that term, negative constitution?
Mm-mm.
So this case is the first time I've ever heard that. So a negative constitution is the idea that the Constitution does not require government to provide any services, public health or otherwise.
Plus you're fucked.
Right? I'm like, then why do we have it and why does everybody quote it? Then a negative constitution is an underlying concept of what dominates the Supreme Court's framing of cases such as DeShaney and Castle Rock. So DeShaney was another case similar to Jessica's. It was a tad bit different, but again, it's that the police department failed to act, which in the court's view fall into the discretionary powers category and thus do not imbue individuals with the legal right to demand protection. So basically, you have no legal right to demand protection from police officers.
Wow.
As Chief Justice Rehnquist wrote in the DeShaney decision, nothing in the language of the Due Process Clause itself requires the state to protect the life, liberty, and property of its citizens against invasion by private actors. The clause is phrased as a limitation on the state's power to act, not a guarantee of certain minimal levels of safety and security. Mm-hmm. Its language cannot be fairly extended to impose an affirmative obligation to the state. Even more than DeShaney, perhaps Castle Rock involved a law whose express purpose was to protect a specified class of persons, women and their children who were victims of violence. So in other words, according to the Supreme Court of the United States, there is no minimum levels of safety and security that the government is obligated to give its citizens.
That's scary.
Now, I left this for the end because I wanted you guys to hear this in a non-bias, because I know the next part sometimes makes people roll their eyes or sometimes it gets people heated depending on which side of the spectrum you are.
So like what? Fuck. Sorry. Never mind. Continue.
So we know that there was an incredible amount of inaction, right? Negligence is what I would call it, allegedly. There was an incredible amount of inaction to Jessica and her daughters. This resulted in the death of her three daughters and her ex-husband. We don't know yet if the daughters were effectively murdered by their dad or if they were murdered during the shootout with the police. But we do know that they're dead, right? They're not coming back. Jessica has taken this all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court shut it down. Jessica Lenihan is of Native American and Latin American descent, and so are her daughters.
So I was going to ask you, the law doesn't protect you when they don't want to protect you. They only do it when if it were like a pretty blonde family with pretty blue eyes, it'd be really different.
I think you just literally summarized what the Supreme Court wrote. I'm sorry, unless you are white, we don't care. And it's sad. It's sad, but it is the sad fucking truth that we live in. So determined to make sure her daughters did not die in vain, Jessica continues to pursue her case to the United States Supreme Court and an international human rights tribunal, seeking to straighten legal rights for domestic violence victims. Meanwhile, her relationship with her one surviving child, remember she had a son before the marriage, it suffers because he himself struggles with the tragedy in his own way. In 2008, Clan Star and the Indian Law Resource Center filed an amicus brief in support of Jessica Gonzalez because all women and children, Indian and non-Indian alike, in the United States have the rights to be protected from violence and to have protection orders enforced by law enforcement officials. So Lucy Simpson she's the executive director of the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center. She stated, "We recognized women are denied the right to have protection orders enforced by police. Left and with great discretionary power, law enforcement officials may and frequently do disregard violations of protection orders. This failure to enforce protection orders leaves women unprotected and vulnerable to ongoing violence. Even though the case did not arise on Indian lands or involve a tribal protection order, it had vast implications for Indian women and the enforcement of tribal protection orders by state law enforcement officials. The amicus brief was the first filed specifically to raise the voice of American Indian women before the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights. We filed the brief to educate the commission about the epidemic of domestic violence and sexual assault against American Indian women in the United States, said Jacqueline Aktuka, who is the editor of Restoration and the former public policy director of Clanstar Incorporated. She states, "We wanted to support Jessica Gonzalez, who is a tribal sister and Native American, but even if she was not, we also understood the rule established by the U.S. Supreme Court in Town of Castle Rock, Colorado versus Gonzalez, which is 545 U.S. 748 2005. This rule extends to all women in the United States, including Indian women." And if you guys want to see a more detailed information from Jessica herself, there is a documentary called Home Truth that you could watch. But as I stated, it was super hard to find articles on this. I had to go to the police report itself. I had to go to legal articles talking about how these affects public safety. And obviously, I found it on the American Indigenous Women's Act website. So that is my story.
Dude, that was, I mean, from your part, as far as like a research part, that was fucking fantastic. Beautiful.
You did your work.
At the same time, I'm depressed. I'm sad. I'm really, really fucking disappointed. And it's fucked up, dude.
That I feel really
fucked me up.
Jessica and her daughters were failed at every single turn in the United States, from the police's inaction, their negligence to act. I mean, she called literally the moment she found out her daughter.
Like, what else can you do though? Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. You've done everything. You call the police when there's something wrong and they have an act to serve and protect.
No, but that's according to the Supreme Court, they don't. Yes. Yeah, right. So growing up, I don't know if this happens in other countries, but here in the US it does. You always have police officers go to the school and talk to the school about safety and listening and following the law and blah, 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 right? And in theory, it's good because you want kids to be aware that there are these departments, such as the police department, the fire department, the emergency department, to be able to assist them in cases of whatever emergency might be happening. But imagine being told all your life, if you need help, we'll be there. And the moment you do need help, not only are they not there, when you finally take it to court, because you're like, you guys failed me. The court, the highest court of the United States tells you, oh no, they didn't fail you, because it's their right to not protect you. Like, you have no right to the police department's protection.
And they fail you time after time after time. You remember last year, unfortunately, there was a Gabby Petito. I don't remember her name.
Gabby Petito. Yes. Yes. Prieto, the, I wish. The girl who, right? Yeah. No, there wouldn't have been such a big manhunt.
Exactly.
It was the girl who went missing after going camping or on
road trip
with her boyfriend. Yeah.
And he unfortunately, I mean, that it's a tragic story. Mm-hmm. It's awful and it's tragic and it's terrible. Yes. But like, how involved was everyone? Police. Mm-hmm. The fucking social medias were fucking popping off, right? Over like the injustice. And that has happened before time. I can say countless. I know I love true crime, so I know tons of story, and they all follow the same, kind of like that same fucking lifeline.
Yeah.
Let's not go too far. If we want to talk about a family, there was that guy who killed his entire family, in Colorado, by the way.
Yeah.
Do you know who I'm talking about?
Yes. Oh my God. I know their names, and obviously I can't remember now. Chris, his name is Chris. And he, God, what is the name of his wife was pregnant, and mm-hmm. he had two daughters, and he put them in the oil, yep. things. But yeah, it was all over the news. You guys, we're not saying any of these are less tragic than the others. We're not. They're no. all equally tragic. Mm-hmm. There's no one tragedy that surpasses another. What we're saying is that
give it the same attention. Give it the same sense of urgency. Give it the same fucking justice.
We focus on the United States because it's where we live.
Mm-hmm.
But from the exposure I've gotten, thanks to TikTok, honestly, I've noticed that the inaction towards Indigenous women happens worldwide. You can see it in Mexico towards our Indigenous communities. They are not treated the same way white Mexicans are treated. In Canada, they have the same fucking issue. And I remember I was hearing a story in China about, you know, Indigenous Chinese like tribes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not... So people who are seen as Indigenous or part of a tribe, or colorism plays a huge part into this.
Yeah.
Worldwide, they're always treated less than, right? Like somehow they deserve less protection, or their life is not as in danger. And we need to change the attitude.
Or they deserve it, or their culture is just like not our culture, right? They're not.
Yeah.
I won't speak worldwide because, to your point, I live in the United States. So I will criticize the fuck out of this country because this is my home. I'm not going anywhere. I'm not going to move to Mexico. Just because I live here doesn't mean like I don't get to criticize and judge our judicial system. It's fucked up.
Yeah.
It's really
there's
fucked
that
up.
There's that one quote, and I want to say it's by, what's his name? Douglas. Basically, the quote goes, and I want to quote it properly, okay? So let me find you the quote.
No, it's really fucked up, dude. Yeah, you look for that quote, but I'm just gonna, just depress me.
Right. Okay, sorry. So this quote is by James Baldwin. I'm sorry. There is also a quote by this man named Douglas, but this is the one I was talking about. I love America more than any other country in the world. And exactly for this reason, I insist on the right to criticize her perpetually.
Absolutely. Amen. Amen. That's the reality. I'm not going to compare it to the rest of the world because the rest of the world has their own fucking issues. I'm not going to compare us to Mexico or to Europe or to anyone because I live here. And I have my own experience as a Mexican-American living in this country, and I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah.
That is fucked up. When it becomes a problem, when it's a blonde girl with blue eyes and comes from a regular, schmegler, middle-class family, then everyone's afraid. Where is she? What happened? Everyone's obsessed. But when it's women of color, when it's families of color, we just don't give the same energy. Let's give that same energy. That's all we're saying.
And
that's all we're saying.
I don't know if you remember this, like a while back, I think during our first season, maybe our second season, I covered a story of a Native American woman who had her baby torn out of her stomach. Remember?
Ugh, how can I forget?
And during that time, we talked again about the disparities between how white women are treated when it comes to these types of crimes versus Indigenous women. And at that time, and after other stories I've covered also about Native Indigenous missing and murdered women, I stated, I wish I could cover every single story of an Indigenous woman who has been gone missing or has been murdered. And there has been inaction done by our government. And I cannot cover every fucking story because there's thousands, hundreds of thousands of them. But every single one of these stories is so important to me. And I hope you guys understand the importance of this. And I hope it's communicated to you guys, because that's why I went so far as to do a whole research on what happened with the Supreme Court, how it affects our public health and safety going forward.
Mm-hmm.
And just the overall treatment Indigenous women have to face day in and day out when interacting with our law enforcement officials.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope I've been able to communicate that properly, because all of these stories are very near and deep to my heart.
You did an amazing job, and thank you so much for covering her story. And
had you ever heard of her story at all?
No. You know, you've been hitting me hard with these true crime stories that I don't know about. Fuck. When it comes to children and like elderly people and people with disabilities, it's so hard for me to like digest.
Yeah.
You know, it's harder to digest. So you fucked me up. That's my job, not yours.
I wanted to go out with the bang. I was like, yeah.
You did. And that you did, my friend. You've been giving me bangers after banger after banger. And my story is actually like the total, I'm derailing completely the fuck. Like,
I'm sorry. Imposter syndrome?
I know, but listen, I'm like derailing when I say, I'm not even like, what's the theme of this podcast? Like covering women, right?
Yeah.
I'm not even going to cover women in this one.
Okay.
I'm going off brand. I'm going
so
rogue.
you have reached your 41st year of life, Carmen.
This is my midlife crisis.
Okay, so I'm gonna finish this truly and then we'll open the next one. So let's get started. Fuck Please. Me up. Wait, are you gonna fuck me up or is this like
I don't think so. It's definitely not lighthearted. I think I just can
see. I can't trust you because you've told me previously this story's gonna be lighthearted, and then I'm just like,
I think I
she got dismembered, her whole arm fell off, and she had to crawl her way for 5 miles. And I'm like, what part of that was lighthearted?
You know, people really fucking that story for some reason. Mary Vincent, by the way, great, great. I mean, great fucking story. But people really always tell me about that story. And I'm like, I'm sorry. No, I had my child listen to that specific episode because it brings awareness to stranger danger.
Yeah.
But then, Carmen, you bring up the fact that you hitchhiked when you were 14, 15. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry.
In front of a prison, nonetheless. Let's not forget people.
People are just
talking about having children listen to stories. I've had... My cousin listened to your exorcism story with my 17-year-old nephew. And I thought she had turned off the episode before the smut came on. But apparently, my 17-year-old nephew is like your fan now. He did listen to the smut story. And he was very questioning about certain anatomical descriptions.
Was it the butt plug? I don't know.
No, I think it had to do with the lube.
Spit on it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry to your cousin.
I warned her.
I'm so, sorry to the baby. I mean, 16, 17 years old, 15, 17. I mean, it was like a sex ed. It was a free sex ed. You're welcome.
You're welcome, you guys. But anything younger, please do not.
Please don't.
There's a reason why I tag us as explicit.
It makes me feel uncomfortable. I shouldn't feel uncomfortable in my own podcast. Have your own podcast with Miss Rachel or something.
Miss Rachel and her smut.
Hi. Welcome.
Today we're going to be talking about butt plugs.
Butt plug?
The butt plug song. Is there a song like that?
Can you say with me, spit on it? Guys, that's disgusting. Don't. I'm sorry, Miss Rachel. That was fucked up.
And people were scared. So there you go. So you managed to get two very incredible emotions out of people during that episode.
Scared and never mind.
Questioning, excited. I don't know. You know?
Not my family, so I will not have an opinion over that. I feel like this is the longest fucking episode we've ever fucking recorded.
I think we owe it to our listeners for like being shitty.
I'm sorry, listeners, but seriously, you guys got an extra episode this season, like, and here we are. We love you and we appreciate you. And today I'm going to tell you I'm going to tell you about one of the worst nuclear accidents that has happened in the world. And it actually happened in your backyard in Juarez, Mexico.
Oh, wow. I was going to say the hills have eyes, right? Because
that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Did you know about this?
I didn't. So
I saw a TikTok today, and I wrote my story today, by the way.
Mind you guys, I let her know like 5 days ago. I'm like, Carmen, my story's ready. I'm ready whenever you are.
I do have a story, but I just haven't felt passionate lately. You know, kind yeah. of like they're great stories, but you're just like, maybe I'll save it. And then yeah. you find that one story that you're just like, this is really fucking cool. Like, I want to talk about it.
Yeah. That's what happened to me with the Jessica Lanahan story. Like, I had a completely separate story like prepared, and mm-hmm. I completely like abandoned that halfway through to do this one.
Yeah. This is a cliff notes of what happened in your backyard.
Jesus Christ. Just let me know. Should I be walking around with a mask on or something? Like, should I just never go outside again?
Maybe, actually.
Jesus Christ. Is this why my hair is falling out?
I want to say this is lighthearted, but it is fucked up. It is fucked up. But yes. Yeah. Yeah. So this is a terrible story that happened in Juarez. And by the way, Laura lives in El Paso. Nobody knew. So literally,
and let's her not let people know.
If you guys forget, you talk about living there all the time. But anyway, so in 1977, a private hospital in Mexico called El Centro Médico de Especialidades illegally purchased a radioactive machine. To start off with,
that sounds like Juarez. That definitely sounds like Juarez.
So, I mean, their intentions were great. Their intentions were great. They found out that radioactive therapy could help, you know, kill cancer, and they had great intentions, but they didn't have documentation. They didn't have permits. They didn't have any fucking thing, right, to purchase this fucking machine from the United States. But they had seen how successful it was in the US. So they're like, oh, we can wing it. We got this. Very Carmen, right? Very fucking Carmen. Like,
that does sound like something you would do. Like, Laura, I got this machine. Let's try to help people. I'm like, okay, here goes Laura.
Let's go wing it.
Sounds like a good idea. Let's do it.
Let's wing it. Fuck it. So that was their fucking mentality. Like, let's save people's lives. But never really thought the process. So they fucking buy this fucking radioactive fucking machine called the Picker C3000. This unit contained approximately 6,000 cobalt 60 pellets of 2.6 GBQs each. I don't know what that translates. I did look it up, by the way. I did. I swear to God, I did. Okay. I did my research.
So what is the measurement?
It's 2.6 GBQs. It's just a lot of fucking nuclear energy.
It's a lot of GBQs, you guys. It's a lot of fucking GBQs.
60 cobalt. Like, it is a massive, like, you can literally fucking make a bomb off of it if you need a fucking science. What a scientist, though. They know a lot, right? I'm sure that if you had the right fucking people, they can probably make a fucking...
As a person who is a pretend scientist on occasion, of course, yeah, we know a lot.
That is a lot. Drink your next Truly. Let me tell you this fucking story.
I'm already on it. We have a lot of GBQs here, people.
There's a lot of GBQs in this fucking machine. I told you I wasn't gonna. How are we depressed and we're laughing now? Like, that is not.
It's the alcohol. Maybe that's something your therapist, like, I hope your therapist does listen to this so she can give me some free therapy.
I'm sorry, therapist. I'm embarrassed for myself. Anyway, so obviously great intentions, really stupid because now they have this fucking machine in their fucking hospital, and they're like, all right, go save people. So the fucking nurses are like, okay, what do I do? What do you mean, what do? You should know what to do. And they're like, how do you work it? Where's the on button? Where's the power button? I don't know. They don't know. So they're like, fuck. So now what do we do with this thing? And he was just like, I don't know. So like, they really didn't think this through, dude. So what does a fucking person, what would a Carmen do? What would a Carmen do when they have this shit?
Throw it in rice. I've been throwing it in rice to see
almost,
if it works.
Almost, bitch. Almost. They locked it in a fucking closet for 6 years. Just locked it away.
But it was like not plugged in, right? I'm assuming if it's not plugged in, it's not harmful.
Do radioactive machines get plugged in, bitch? I don't know.
They should, right? Like, shouldn't they have like a special power outlet? Like,
this is 1977. I wasn't alive. I didn't do the research.
This is probably how we died in 1977.
The apocalypse was
what do we do? Happen. Put it in rice. No, put it in the closet.
No, we're going to put it in a closet for 6 years. Lock it away because something might happen. Uno nunca sabe.
That's correct.
Put it in a closet because we never know what could happen.
They're so they go did. Two ways. Uno nunca sabe. It's in the closet. Wink, wink.
Wink, wink. So they locked it up in this fucking closet, right? And eventually they're like, hey, we need the closet. 6 years later, they're like, we actually need to put some stuff in the closet now. They're like, it doesn't fit. What do you mean it doesn't fucking fit? Well, the fucking thing is in the closet. What do you think? The fucking thing for the cancer is in the fucking closet. Well, get rid of it. And so the fucking president of the hospital, I'm guessing, is like, it's like, get rid of the thing. And the guy's like, how? The janitor's like, how? It's huge.
Just throw it in the trash, duh.
So he's like, well, pretty much. He's like, we lost a lot of money with this shit. Like, how about we sell the fucking metal for scraps? So, like, desármala, take it apart, and just go sell it to a fucking somewhere.
It sounds like a very Mexican thing to do.
It's a very Mexican thing to
do. Like, what are you going to do with this? I don't know. Probably sell it for parts.
Sell it for the parts. And that's what this poor janitor fucking did, dude. Vicente Sotelo Alardín, an employee at the medical center, dismantled the unit on December 6th, 1983. And so he like dismantles all this bullshit and he ends up taking it to this. Oh, so he puts it, he dismantles it. And then like the nuclear energy waste, what was it? The 2.6 GBQs?
Yeah, the GBQs.
Start spilling out. And he doesn't know, no. Right? Because he just doesn't know anything. He's just like, oh, I'm not any part of the fucking machine. I don't know. But he's like, whatever. So he dismantles the entire fucking machine.
Yeah.
There's all this shit. He puts it in the back of his little pickup truck, his little white pickup truck. And some guys help him. And he's all happy, just driving his car. Takes it to this, the Phoenix junkyard, and sells it for scraps. All this entire fucking nuclear waste from the hospital all the way to the junkyard, just like giving it to everyone. Everyone. And just
It's probably diluted by now. And how does nuclear waste work?
It wasn't, my dear. It wasn't. It was very potent. If this was sperm, it'd be making so many babies right now. So it was so potent, but he was just right because he doesn't know anything, right? No one knows this shit. So he finally gets to the junkyard. He sells it for money. He's like, whatever. He does his thing. And then the fucking truck breaks down. The truck with all the juices and all the liquids and all the nuclear shit that happened is just there. And it breaks down. He's just like, I guess I'll park it here and I'll get to it when I get to it. So he just fucking parks the truck all fucking nucleared out in the middle of fucking nowhere. So in the meantime, he's already sold all this scrap metal. He takes it back to the hospital and that's kind of done. So what they end up doing at the factory is that they get the metal and they start recycling with other metal. And they start doing, they start making these things called, what's it called? Like these rods, rebars. Do you know what those are?
No.
So the scrap that they did, they started making rebars. And rebars are, ya ves que en Mexico, like the houses are made out of like concrete and like cylinder blocks and shit.
Oh, like you're talking about like the metal bars that go in between.
Metal bars, yes. So those long metal bars, rebars is what they're called in English.
So for those of you guys who don't know, houses in Mexico, they're notoriously made with bricks and cement. And what people do is they put these long metal bars, like long, long metal bars,
like the
in
framing.
The cement,
it's like
in between the bricks. And what you'll notice is a lot of houses in Mexico will actually have exposed metal bars on the top. And it's because people obviously have to build bit by bit because they're saving up their money. So they'll leave the bars up there so that they're able to build like a second
they're
story
able
to the
to
house.
Build up. In Mexico, you build up. You don't build. There's not a lot of, well, if you buy within like a small area, right? The suburbia is building up, not building around. It's a really cool concept. And I also like this whole reuse, reduce, recycle kind of mentality, but not when it's nuclear waste. And so they were just like, cool. They bought their rebars and they started like making it. And
they start fucking exporting these nuclear wasted fucking rebarbs. And dude, they made so many tons after they mixed in their scraps with other metals. They had so much to export that they were exporting like in 16 states in Mexico. Chihuahua, Durango, Baja California, Zacatecas, not only there, but also to the United States. So they were just selling all this fucking nuclear wasted fucking metal all over the fucking between the US and Mexico, nonchalant. They end up getting one load and they're sending it up here, up north. The truck driver gets derailed somewhere along his way. And he ends up in none another than Los Alamos, New Mexico. Los Alamos, New Mexico.
The hills have eyes, so if anybody's seen it.
If anyone knows, Los Alamos, New Mexico is where they built the atomic bomb. So if anybody knows about nuclear energy, it is going to be the labs at Los Alamos.
That we clearly do not work at.
So I guess there's some type of technology that... in the 80s, apparently, that when he was that detected it as someone stole the nuclear energy. So the fucking alarms in the town go off. Bah, 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 bah. All because this fucking trailer guy got lost in the middle of fucking nowhere. Well, he got just lost and he derailed into Los Alamos. So they start like alerting everyone because they detected that nuclear energy. So this is already like a year into right after like building all the rods. So they go in and he's just like, I didn't steal anything. Like, what are you talking about? They're like, you are carrying some type of like nuclear shit. And he's like, no, I just have metal rods. Like, you can fucking check in my, like, open me up. I'm like, no, no, no. So yeah, no, sure enough, they did. And he's just like, no, I work for this company. So they start kind of like doing the whole thing and they were able to trace it back to the original factory. So they get back to the factory. And everyone starts shutting them down. They're like, and this isn't Juarez. And they're like, no, what the fuck? Like, what you just did is like a human fucking, like, no. Like, you are about to kill fucking people. Apparently, nuclear energy works this way. I could be exposed to nuclear energy for an hour right now. Yeah. And I can be fine. Okay. Right? I mean, I'd probably be fucked up, but I'd be okay. Yeah. But if I'm exposed to nuclear energy for 5 minutes every fucking day for a year...
like consistently. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If it's a consistent everyday thing, then I'm fucked. And this is where all the issues begin, right? So now imagine they go back and they trace back this fucking factory and they've traced back that they've sold thousands of tons of these rods all over Mexico in 16 different states. They go back and they've also exported it into the United States. And then they go back and they're like the fucking workers at the factory that had to deal with this nuclear waste. The fucking guy that had the fucking little pickup truck and drove that shit contaminating all that fucking nuclear shit all over Juarez. It's everywhere. It's just everywhere. So they tried to retrieve as much as they could. They went to Zacatecas, they went to Durango, Monterrey, San Luis Potosí. They were able to recover 2,360 tons of the unused bar. They visited over 17,000 buildings suspected to be built with the contaminated rebar and determined that 814 structures would have to be demolished due to the levels of radiation. They also used this rebar to build table bases and were able to retrieve as much as they could, but there's so much unused or like even neighborhoods in Juarez, for example. In Juarez, there's like a whole section where they had already built homes with this rebar that they cannot use because it's all contaminated. So there are like dead zones that they're not able to reach to. Because it's so radioactive to this day still.
And so why would you tell me this after I've drove all around Juarez and got lost like 5 times there?
For awareness, baby, because obviously you didn't know. So be aware. No, so this is what they did. So after they recovered all this rebar, they went to this place called Samalayuca. It's a desert in on the outskirts of Juarez.
Yeah.
So, And what they did is they built a hole and they put all the rebar that they found that they were able to recover. I don't think they recovered because Zacatecas was one of like the heavily dense places too. So if you're fucked up, I'm fucked up too. So they went in there and they built a massive hole. They put all the rebar, all whatever they were able to retrieve. And also that little pickup truck that little dude had.
They had to bury the pickup truck
because it was so radiated.
You have to think about like, because he drove the pickup truck to work. He parked next to people at work daily for a year. Oh my God.
No, so the pickup truck was actually, yeah, it was actually there just sitting unbroken, like broke as fuck for 40 days in like a random place. But yeah, it was very public. And then he was able to fix it. So he took it to his house. So now he intoxicated his neighbors around him
too. Like the mechanic is intoxicated. The neighborhood's intoxicated.
Everyone is fucked, dude. Everyone
is fucked. Oh my God.
Everyone is fucked. So they buried the little pickup truck. They buried the rebar. They buried as much as they could. But in 2000 and fucking, what was it? See, this is why I have, this is why I need to read my stories, dude, because I'm here for a good time, not a long time.
We have a good excuse. It's probably the radiation.
Yeah, dude, for real, man. In 2001, it was reported that 110 tons of radioactive waste from Ciudad Juarez had been kept just in the fucking free. It was just kept like outdoors, like just out and about.
Holy smokes.
It was just kept out and about. And then in 2001, they were just like, okay, so we probably should bury this too. So I ended up burying it. But yeah, that was pretty fucking crazy. They estimate that about 40,000 people were affected from this incident. But actually, let's be smart right now. Do you think it was only 40,000 people?
Oh, no. It was way more than that.
It was way
like more we're than exporting that. To 16 different states inside of Mexico. And we're exporting to the U.S. Plus all the people who happened to be by the truck, whose houses were next to the contaminated houses or buildings. We're talking about people who would park in day in and day out next to a radiated pickup truck.
Yeah. So we really don't know the number, right? At least it was 40,000, but it was probably well over that number of people that have been exposed to this radiation. Fortunately for you, and I hope this makes you feel better, that the density and the capacity of all of that like being harmful has like reduced to less than half by now. It's been what, fucking 40 years now? So it's not as toxic as it was, but it definitely is. If you go to Samalayuca, I'm guessing that would probably be fucked up. But the people that were directly exposed to it have had long-term effects, skin conditions, cancer, as you can imagine. Actually, like there were some videos of some people that like reported to have like skin rashes, like over time. I'm guessing it was the neighbors. There's not a lot of information, and I'm guessing it's because it is Mexico, right? So, but yeah. This was one of the most tragic fucking like accidents. Like we know when it's been like hella okay, like we bombed you know, actual places, but this is an
Hiroshima actual accident. Stuff. Yeah.
Exactly. Hiroshima, but this was an actual accident all by stupid negligence and complete idiot. It's not estúpidos. Like they're just dumb. And yeah. That is my story.
The road to hell is paved with good intentions.
They wanted to save people.
I was going to tell you that because I remember reading a book way back when I was in elementary school. And it was about how the government had people. And I don't know if this was a story of fiction or nonfiction. But basically in the book, it said that the government would go around to people, give them these stars that they had to put on their chest. And then they would tell them to go out and look at the fireworks show. And then they would go out and then obviously they tested the atomic bombs and then they would come back and grab the stars from the people to determine how much of a radiation you were exposed to, right? Based off of your star. And a lot of people ended up with a lot of cancer or reproductive issues, right? A lot of people became sterile. That's like one of the main causes that happens yeah. after you've been exposed to radiation. So I'm just like, I wonder how many people, like, let's say little kids, like, let's say you were born, were a baby, a toddler, a kid, and you were exposed to this continuously for days on end. And now you're grown up and you're sterile and you're like, well, what could have caused this?
Yeah.
And like, little did you know, it could have been your neighbor's house.
So deja tú, it apparently affects four generations, like the people plus four generations. So if they were exposed to it, that's what they're saying.
So like, if you have no symptoms, your kids or your kids' mm-hmm. kids or your great grandkids could have issues.
Yeah.
That is crazy.
Isn't that crazy? And we don't fucking know about it, dude. Like, they don't teach us about this fucking shit.
I wonder if Edith's family knows about it, because they're from Juarez.
They're from Juarez.
And they're from Zacatecas, right? Like, they moved from Zacatecas to Juarez.
Fresnillo, right?
I'm not sure what part, but I'll have to ask her. Because remember, we've talked about, like, maybe a trip to Zacatecas.
Because Fresnillo was actually one of, like, the biggest purchasers of this company that was selling that rebar.
I'm going to have to ask her now.
Oh, my God, ask her.
I'm going to have to ask her. I'm gonna, like, Edith. Let's look at your family history. And
you are so freaked out by this story.
I am, because
this entire time, you just, your face is like, no, I'm moving out. I'm scared.
Yes,
I'm
not Carmen, drinking I'm about the water. To like walk around with a mask on my face and like just like friggin' hand sanitizer all over. I don't even know if that like cures me from
hand sanitizer
radiation, but that is scary. That is scary. You guys, I have children who are growing up and developing. And what if, like, their children are affected? I mean, Ariana said she doesn't want kids, but Alberto swore he was going to have kids. So I need to know if I'm going to, you know, what's going to happen.
Yeah. No.
That is a wild story.
I'm sure you'll be fine. It's already diluted. It's not. I mean,
By half.
It's diluted by half. No, but you have to go to Samalayuca. Like, that's where it's all at.
And how do you know I haven't been lost there? Do you know how many times I've gone lost in Juarez? And I'm like, where am I? I don't know. The middle of the desert.
Just lock yourself in a closet. You'll be fine. 6 years.
For 6 years. And that's where they'll find my body. Because we know now that I could be lost forever and nobody would find out.
We've circled back.
And this, now you're making me rethink why I'm on auto pay for all of my bills.
Maybe this is my way to tell you to move back. I think it works.
I just might have to, you guys. I'm like almost done with my Truly. I'm like, I don't know. This is very heavy on me right now.
But it was, I mean, it's a ridiculous story. It's holy interesting smokes. And it's wow. Right? It totally derailed, but you know what? This is our fucking podcast. We get to do
it is history, right? It is women's history. Like, mm-hmm. like this is stuff that affects us, you guys. And whether you've passed through El Paso or you've had family in Mexico or the United States, you might have been affected. You don't know. I don't know. We should all get checked. Is there a way to get checked?
For cancer, go to your primary health advisor. And I'm sure you're fine. You go to your routine checkups.
You get a health checkup, everybody.
They say there's like nuclear waste in our mountains, hence the hill have eyes. So we're fine.
Well, that's because of the Alamos testing, right? But yes, they say that because of the way the wind and everything works, the nuclear fallout from the bombs that the U.S. like atrociously dropped on Japan, the nuclear fallout is still in the wind and it still travels across the globe, and we have all in a way been affected by it. So and there's that movie coming out about the guy who created atomic bombs.
I want to watch that.
Me too.
Oppenheimer. Yeah, I'm gonna watch that next week. Yeah,
and it's with that hot guy, the Irish guy.
I don't know, he's on
the actor.
Yeah, he's on my tip.
I would totally jump on him like immediately. Have you seen the Peaky Blinders? Watch the Peaky Blinders and then judge me.
Peaky Blinders? Oh, yeah.
So you're telling me you've watched the Peaky Blinders and you still wouldn't jump on his bones?
I haven't seen it. No, I haven't seen it. I just know about it, but I haven't seen it. But yeah, no, I definitely want to watch the movie because it looks really good.
Cillian Murphy, for those of you wondering.
Cillian Murphy, he's okay. He's a solid 4 or 5. I'm all about personality, like not hotness. No, I want like personality.
And that's why I love my Brandon, because he has tons of personality for days. For days and days. Days upon days. Why are you laughing? For. Bitch. Edit this out, Fernando. Oh, Fernando's not here. I'm going to have to edit
it. Fernando's not here. You're going to be our editor this week. Fernando's on vacation. He's like, fuck you guys. You take too long.
We do. I'm sorry. We don't deserve you.
I decided to nickname Brandon Taylor Swift, T-Swift, for going forward because he's a problem. Yeah.
We keep on circling back tonight, so it worked out.
Yeah.
Nice conclusion.
Isn't that a nice end to our fourth season?
We did. We ended with a bang. It was wild here. But yeah, you guys, we'll see you next time. And give us a couple of months. The summer was hard, you guys. It was hard recording. There's so many fun things to do right now that yeah, we look forward to spending it.
That we have not done at all.
That we have not done at all because we keep recording this podcast, Laura. But it's okay.
I love it. Thank you guys so much for sharing your time with us. And don't forget to follow us on TikTok. Carmen will have work cut out for her to have to go back through 40 episodes and find clippets to upload to TikTok.
I know.
And
poor me.
Yeah. Wait, how do we end?
No es cafecito con tu abuela.
It's tequila shots with your best friend.
Good night.
Bye.